This podcast is a part of the Carbon Almanac Network of Podcasts.
Hi, I'm Christina. I'm from Prague.
Hi, I'm Jen, and I'm from Canada.
Hi, I'm Olabanji, and I'm from Nigeria.
Hello, I'm Liki, and I live in Paris.
Hi, I'm Brian, and I'm from New York.
Welcome to Carbon Sessions, a podcast with carbon conversations for every day with everyone from everywhere in the world. In our conversations, we share ideas, perspectives, questions, and things we can actually do to make a difference. So don't be shy and join our Carbon Sessions because it's not too late.
The thing I was going to share was I watched, it was sort of a documentary. It was a short little YouTube video, like 20 minutes, put on by a paper company called Weyerhaeuser Paper, which is where it's just a big manufacturer. It's a big timber company here in the U.S. with lots of land holdings, but they make, among many things, lots of paper towels, printing paper, all those kind of things. And it was a deconstruction of the paper recycling and cardboard recycling process. And they just really like talk through like how they do it, how it all comes in, like all the process, right? And one of the things I found really interesting that was just a learning moment for me, which was contrary to like wisdom I'd been given, was there's a person here who's in charge of, you know, this woman's in charge of this huge paper recycling plant. And she says into the camera, she says, please give us all of your paper. We don't care if it has pizza grease on it. We don't care if it has this. We don't. And she like named and listed all these things. And she said, we want it, and here's why. And she like talked back a little bit about some of like, because those fibers that are in that pizza box are actually still long format fibers, and we need more of those to make printing paper. And then when printing paper is a little bit less fiber, but then that gets broken down, then we make paper towels or toilet paper, you know, like. And but it was this not admonishment, but it was this reminder moment that she was like, don't not put something into your paper or cardboard recycling bin because it's messy or dirty. She was like, we're really good at this. We've got all the systems and things that will pull out plastic and staples and pizza grease and food tidbits. Like, we will solve for all that. We're good at this. Just give us your stuff. Because I don't know about you all, but I routinely will find myself with other, you know, where people will put things not in the recycle bin because it's greasy, messy, has staples, has tape on it. I take the time and tear every piece of tape, you know, like the plasticky tape off my cardboard recycling things. And so that almost just feels like this lesson, similar to, you know, these other lessons we were talking about. We're going to have to leave it to you to change the outcome of the Invisalign. You and your industry, I don't think the average consumer will change the outcome. Although maybe the consumers will say, I want a seaweed one, you know, like maybe they will. Anyway, just a thought, just a little thing that I was intrigued by, that it feels like the listeners could be like, oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think with the Invisalign thing, it's I've spoken to my colleagues, and when I talk to them about it, I think the thing that I want to get across is that the important thing is that we're honest about it. And when I gave the talk recently, the person who was talking in front of me was talking about their experience with a particular aligner system. And I knew that a big part of my talk was going to be about aligners. And so I didn't want to embarrass him by standing up and saying all about the aligners. So when I started to talk about the aligner, I said, look, there's a bit of an elephant in the room here. And I said, now, I don't want to be seen as a hypocrite because I use aligners. I do use them. And that the most important thing is that we're honest about it, that, you know, we are using aligners and there is all this plastic that we're using. Because if we're honest about it, then that's fine. But if we're not and we try to hide it, then we become complicit. At least if we talk about it, then it gives us the opportunity to create the situation where industry can change. At the end of the talk, there were people who were actually saying, I'm actually going to bring up sustainability as part of our audit processes. So the Royal London Hospital, one of the guys there is actually going to bring that up at the Royal London. And that was really, I thought, things like that coming out of that talk we're hopefully going to be quite helpful.
Yeah, I think there are things changing in the markets. I go to Saturday markets in Prague, and I would say two, three years ago, they changed the law that in the market, when they serve hot wine or coffee or any kind of drinks, they have these plastic cups you guys were talking about before from thick plastic. And so you buy the cup and you can bring it back, either dirty or clean, doesn't matter, but you can bring it back and get the either refund or new drink in a clean cup. And I was worried when they started that people won't do it. They'll just take the cup home and don't bring it back or throw it out. But in 2 years, it's almost ingrained habit. When my friends go, automatically when they go to the market, they already bring their coffee cup with a lid and all that stuff. So I think I love when people develop habits in bigger numbers than just separate one by one.
There's a coffee shop in Kent that's actually stopped giving cups to its customers now. So it won't serve you unless you bring your own cup. And as part of the campaign, they filled the floor of their coffee shop up. So it was waist deep pretty much with all the cups that they kind of saved up, all these cups which had been wasted. And they filled the store up with these things and took a photograph of it so that they could just make this point about how much waste was going on. And they refused to
serve. What about if you really want to have a cup of coffee, but you're not walking around with your cup in your bag or in your pocket. Can you buy a mug or something and then make it yours?
Oh, yes.
That's good.
But they don't make a big thing about that.
Can I ask a question on that? So at least here in the US, many states, not every state, but many states have outlawed the use of those really thin film grocery bags. Like the really, like just almost thinner than paper. Most grocery stores, they no longer can give those out. And you can only do reusable. But many of the reusables, they're also made of plastic. They're just a much sturdier plastic that it's made out of. It's like a very stiff, and it's like, it's technically reusable, but it's actually just like, you know, a tenth of a gram of plastic versus 20 grams of plastic, right? And I might be getting the measurements wrong, but like it's a 20x amount of plastic in weight between the two. And so you go and they have you buy those reusables, but you're actually consuming a lot more resources to do so. And then in all likelihood, invariably what I think happens is you have too many of those, and then some of those just get thrown away as well. Like, it's actually like a worse version of the problem than before. Not all those reusables get reused at all. And I wonder, Rob, I'm curious about sort of like the mugs and things, because I've seen things similar to that where they like cause you to buy a thing, but then you just end up with all these like leftover things that you don't need because you had to buy one in the effort to avoid a disposable thing. And like, it becomes a question like, I don't know that I know the answer. Is there a better outcome? Leaky has the answer. Her hand is up.
Yeah, I have my hands is up. I work with fashion designers, you know, and I help them transition towards more sustainable designs. And there's one saying that is the most sustainable piece of clothing is the one that you already own. You don't need to buy a new one. This is the most sustainable one, whether it's made of plastic or cotton or whatever. If it's already yours, it's the most sustainable one. So any new piece of clothing, and it also works with bags and shopping bags or mugs or whatever, any new items will be less sustainable than the one you already own. You know, it just, I don't know, I see it over on social media. The Stanley cup, this is crazy. you know.
One of these kind of cups. Yeah, yeah. Not the Stanley Cup, the hockey prize.
No. One of these cups, the cup you're showing, yeah.
Like an insulated for our podcast listeners, and it's supposed an insulated
to,
cup
you
know, mug.
To be yes. the kind of mug you can take and go to Rob's coffee shop. But then there are people that start mm-hmm. collecting, like in all colors, and the company, the brand makes it in all colors. So there are people that start collecting, and this is just getting insane, really. It defeats the purpose of the whole thing.
Well, I will say in my house, I have a shelf of all of these mugs that I've been gifted. I have so many, and I keep them in there like unused, and I re-gift them, including plenty of them have like, these are stickers from Oregon, where I'm from, on here. But like, I keep them, even if they have like logos on them that are from some company that gifted me a branded item, I re-gift them. But I will say it's actually hard to now find someone who doesn't have one of these that I could give it to, that wants one, you know, that has any use for one that they don't already have. And so there is that it's an interesting, it's almost like this, meme, this like pattern that gains momentum, and then it gets so much momentum that it overproduces itself. Like there's so much more of it than anyone needs that it is now, it's a wonderful gift. If someone gives me one of these, they spent $20 and it's, you know, like I appreciate the sentiment, but it's $20 for a thing that I don't need in my life.
And there's lots of them in the thrift stores. I was in a thrift store recently and I noticed a whole shelf of reusable cups in the thrift store, water cups, and because people like a particular kind or they want it to do certain things or yeah.
I like in the market that it's a long market. So you buy coffee on one end and return the cup at the other end. So you don't take it home a lot of times.
Well, so that I want to go to that. Like, is there a way for a coffee house so I'm going to back up. There was a company that I almost invested in. It was on a television show called Shark Tank. I don't know if any of you have seen the like television show Shark Tank. And it was a company, I thought it was a really wonderful idea. So I reached out to the founder and started having some dialogue with them and possibly engaging and investing in the company. And what the company made was a vending stand for umbrellas. And then they produced really nice, they had very nice umbrellas, like sturdy, good umbrellas that could like withstand even, you know, even a Cornwall breeze or whatever we'd say there in Cornwall. And instead of, I don't know if it's in your cities, but when the rain comes out, like there's just all these drugstore, you know, $6 umbrellas that break. They're not even good for the one storm you're in, let alone five storms. And so the idea was, okay, you come up and you swipe your credit card, you get an umbrella, it pops out an umbrella and it charges you $5. If you don't return the umbrella to another one of the stands within like a week or two, it was like a period of time, then it charges you for the full value of the umbrella and you get to keep it. And it's a nice, it's a really well-made umbrella, but then you get to keep it. And it was $28. I'm getting the numbers wrong, I'm sure. And so the theory was, and then they've had marketing on the umbrella. So someone was sponsoring the umbrella itself. And then you walked around as a little billboard, right? But it discouraged waste. It encouraged use and reuse of the umbrellas. And an umbrella is probably one of the least easy to use and then put back and like turn back into thing. A coffee cup, Christina, to your point, or to sort of, you know, the thing. There's so many places. If I went to my local coffee store this morning and I didn't have my thermos cup with me and my sort of reusable cup, they could say, great, here is, we're scanning the QR code. We've got a mug for you. It's got our brand and logo on it. For today's use, it costs you nothing. You buy your cup of coffee and here you go. If it's not scanned back in at the store in, you know, in a week, if you haven't come and dropped it back off, the next time you come in with your cup of coffee, then we charge you the $20 that this insulated mug is worth, right? Then you bought it. Is there a viable way to do something?
So the trick, how they solved it, that all the cups have logo, Prague logo on it. So all the vendors have the same cups. So you take the cup and buy it from one vendor and return it to another vendor because they're all the same. So you don't have to come back to the original vendor. So basically the city is the one who has the advertisement on the cup. So I thought that was clever.
Mm-hmm. And it reduces their trash bins being full, which reduces their staffing costs and their garbage. For the city, there's actually some municipal savings.
Exactly. Yeah,
The German markets, they give these, they're quite nice, either Stein glasses for beer, and there's mulled wine ones as well, which are all ceramic. But you have to pay the full price for that right from the word go. And then they charge you for the beer or whatever you're having. And then you can keep that. And just if you keep it all evening and drink all evening, then you just pay for the beer that you get poured into it. And then if you give it them back at the end of the evening, they pay you the full price back. And if you keep it, you just keep it and walk away with it. So
yeah, that's a very
yeah, and it's it reduces litter in the area. I don't think they did it straight away, but they were using plastic pint glasses at first, and there was a lot of waste. So yeah, it saves a lot for the council as well as for the vendors.
I wonder if there are any companies out there helping create a system around that. Rob, yours and Christina, yours are sort of like self-solved, right? The city in your case, Christina, and the beer hall, I guess, in your case, Rob, are self-solved. They've said, okay, we've just come up with a methodology for doing this ourselves. But I wonder if there are any companies that are like trying to help solve this in some fashion, like as the mission of the company.
I've always thought that the umbrella problem needs to be solved. It's a real, really, really big problem because nobody wants to carry an umbrella. I mean, I don't. I never carry an umbrella. It's just bulky. And when you carry an umbrella, there's a rule: it never rains. So, it's useless unless you really need it. And once you've used it, it's just bulky again. It becomes troublesome again. So it's really, we really need to rethink of the ownership of the umbrella, because I think that the umbrella shouldn't be something that is owned by people, but should be owned by, like, you know, the city or companies, as you said. Because I had this idea when I was living in Singapore, because in Singapore, there's a rule in the rainy season. It always rains when at lunchtime, in the morning, at lunchtime, and when you go home. Apart from that, it never rains. And I hate umbrellas. I don't carry any umbrellas. So it was just really, really bugged me. And so I don't know. The umbrellas shouldn't be owned by people. Umbrellas should be owned by a higher body.
Umbrella shop owners are, you know...
Oh yeah,
I live in near Vancouver, where rains a lot, and there are fancy umbrella shops everywhere. But I think if the umbrellas that were sort of like the scooters and the bikes you can pick up here and drop off there, if they were branded and really ugly, no one would want to keep them. And so,
but Jen, so here's this company, and I'm forgetting the name of the thing. Part of what we got. I got interested and excited about was, right, so, and I'm in New York City, so when you walk around with an umbrella, a lot of people see it, right? Like it is a billboard that has a lot of eyeball impressions. And so So the idea of having a branded umbrella that, like for my company, the value, if that umbrella costs $28 to you know, retail, and they rent the umbrella for $5, every time that umbrella gets rented and used, maybe for brand exposure, my company might be willing to basically pay a dollar of that $5 for just our brand getting walked around by someone. And then if they keep it, that means that they're going to keep using it, presumably, right? And so maybe I even contribute $5 towards the retail value keeping it cost. And that was part of the, I was interested in investing in the business because I really liked the potential impact they could have and the thoughtfulness of a shared, I mean, it's like you just said, Leakey, someone at a higher level should own these umbrellas. That's what this business idea was. You go install these at college campuses and in more dense urban environments, not so much the spread out. So that there's always a nearby one you can pick one up and drop one off at. But Jen, I think it's, you don't have to make them ugly. Let people enjoy them and like let the marketing be marketing. Let them be beautiful.
I'm interested in company that you saw on Shark Tank because you said you nearly invested in it. I don't know why you didn't invest in it, but I think that the key to success for this company is to partner or to have access to a very extensive network because for this project, for this product to work, it needs to be available and wherever you go. So it has to have access or partner with a very wide, a very dense retail network. So in that case, that starts to be very, very interesting.
Hmm. I think it's called Brella Box. I'm looking to see if they're still in business. What happened to the umbrella?
One of the things our transit system does that they used to do it, and I don't know if they still do, but I always thought it was fun, is they collect all the lost umbrellas over the year. And once a year, they have an umbrella sale. And you can go and find the most amazing umbrellas for $1 or $2, maybe up to $5. But people go and get the umbrellas, and that's sort of a way of recycling because I think the money gets donated to a charity. And then all these lost items that haven't been claimed in a year get put back into use. And then a charity gets benefits from some of the money. We used to, when we were having years ago, a church garage sale, they used to give us 50 umbrellas every year to sell at our church sale. They just give them to us and we would sell them again. And people looked forward to the umbrella table because there was always interesting things there. But it was a good way to recirculate and raise funds for not-for-profits. So
yeah, the umbrella is not owned by anyone.
Well, and now I've just looked up Brella Box and it looks like they have stopped taking orders and aren't in business.
Yeah.
But I still think it was a really good idea. Maybe now is the time for us to, maybe this is a Carbon Almanac TCA community. We'll buy the rights to the business. It's like our blue label with
Hank Rogers, Blue Alliance, Hank Rogers. Yes.
And our fashion brand idea that we came up with during the podcast recording, I think it was after, not part of the episode re-aired, but it was after that we recorded this wonderful part. Yeah. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I'm still thinking about it. But I think one thing, one action we can start doing for this project, this umbrella project, is to start collecting umbrellas and then find a way to brand them. This idea came to, because I've just signed up for to be a member of the Green Runners. I just paid my membership. And the Green Runners is an organization that advocate for runners to have more sustainable practices. And so one of the pillars is based on the way we kit up. And so one of the pillar is to refuse new items or items that you don't need. And when you are a member of the association, you can pledge. And one of the pledge is to say, okay, I pledge to revisit the way I kit up and refuse new items. Like, you know, because when you run, you have a lot of t-shirts And so when you're part of this organization, they don't send you any t-shirts, obviously, but they will send you just a badge, and you can just sew it on your existing t-shirts. And so so what we could do is to, for the umbrella project, we could start collecting the umbrellas and then start thinking of, you know, maybe a badge, or like, you know, create big thing for the umbrellas, and then like find a smart way to brand these umbrellas. And so startup cost is, it's not that expensive. I mean, the most difficult thing is to find, to partner with a retail network.
And Leaky, that idea comes back to that sort of conversation with Hank, and really that idea of like just applying, like take an item, and this goes to your adage from before of like the most sustainable item with the least impact is the one that you already have, or the one that already exists. It existed, it's not new, it's, you could say vintage, but not necessarily vintage. And making that something that people are proud of. They're proud to not have a new t-shirt. They're proud to have this badge on an old t-shirt, right? On a t-shirt that they already had, because they're saying, hey, this is my running shirt, but I pledged I'm not accepting all these new, because I've done 5Ks and 10Ks and things. And yes, every single one of them comes with a t-shirt and a headband, you know, like all these different items from, you know. That is interesting. I think it comes back to this idea of creating pride in wearing a badge. So in its sense, its own logo branding, that the badge itself says, I didn't buy a new thing, right? That's what the badge is signifying and symbolizing to the viewer, is I didn't take a new thing. I've kept this old thing, but it's with intent.
And because you're showing it, it starts a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And that could be not on clothing, but as you said, on an umbrella.
Yeah. Green umbrella.
We could call it Green Umbrella.
Well, and Hank actually offered, he's like, I own the rights to the Blue Planet brand. I think that was like he had the trademark rights that he's licensed to people. He offered this up in our call, right? Yeah. As part of it.
Yes.
I don't know. Wow. Maybe this is a business to go back to. Or at least an idea, because it doesn't even have to be that logo itself. Some way of just signifying that you've chosen that choice, right? I don't know. Very interesting. Are there other ways that you all have friends or colleagues who do something in this way that is like choosing not to buy something new, that there's an outward signal of it, right? Like for a while here in the US, it was very common that people started drinking out of mason jars, like canning jars and ball jars. And it became a trendy thing, but then it wasn't, in the beginning, it was reused old mason jars. And then it became, you go into a store and there's 400 mason jars for sale, all brand new, right? Like it got inverted, you know, from the original source intent. So I'm curious if there are like other little habits or trends in your life of people using, like intentionally choosing to reuse a thing versus buy a new thing.
There's a coffee shop that I go to sometimes near my work, and they make mason jar salads. And so you can buy a salad to take away in a mason jar. And if you bring it back, you get a percentage off of the next thing you buy. So there's incentive to bring the jar back. But yeah, they're, you know, and of course they're really nice salads made in these jars, and they do a lot of that, you know, real dishes. I'm always the one going in and saying, can I have that in a real cup? Instead of in a plastic cup. Sometimes they look at you and but I don't know. I see people walking around with their reusable mugs and water, especially water bottles a lot. But I'm still finding it's hard. Like we're doing a concert. We're putting on a big a music concert at our church coming up. And again, it's the conversation, let's please have jugs of water and glasses out instead of selling bottled water. You know, you're still having, I'm still having to have that conversation.
What about the rest of you? Any other examples in your local life?
I just attended an event, a 3 days event. Okay, it's totally biased. It's called Change Now, the event of Solutions for the Planet. They were paper cup for coffee. And then all drinks are very healthy. There's a fountain. On the website, they said, okay, please bring your own bottle because we don't sell any water. And so you can refill. It's a 3 day event. But if you don't have your bottle, you don't have any cup, they have plastic cups, big, very thick plastic cups. So you use them. And then once it's used, it says, okay, keep yours for the duration of the day or something. And then once it's used, it goes in a bin and they just wash it. That was brilliant, but it's totally biased because it's biased because it's the theme of the summit. Yeah. I just feel very, very, not feel bad, but I feel very awkward because, as I said, I just finished a race last weekend and I counted the number of plastic bottles I used, which I never use plastic bottles because it's just, I hate that. I think I had 8 or 9 bottles multiplied by the number of runners, which was probably 60,000. So, and I think I'm not the one who had the biggest number of bottles. So it was like, just, I'm not good at maths, but just multiply, like, let's say 8 to 60,000. It's just incredible. And I feel bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's almost 500,000. You're talking about like sort of a disposable water, you know, just a plastic where you buy a bottle of water.
Plastic bottles, the thing that I don't buy anymore, you know, yeah, disposable ones.
I just watched a really interesting interview by a YouTube character that I watch. It's all about ultralight hiking. And he interviewed the founder of a company called Sawyer. And their water filtration devices, I don't know if anyone has seen these before. They're little like blue, they're like 3 inches long with a stem on each end. And they are, it's a water filter that is very, it's the sort of one become almost the de facto, if you're out hiking for many days in a row, it's one of the main things you use to take, you know, water you find and filter it so that you can consume it and you're safe from bacteria and viruses and these things. And the founder of the company shared something very interesting. He said that they respond to global emergencies, everything from earthquakes in North Africa to hurricanes in the Caribbean to all over. And they just put a person on a plane with a duffel bag of their water filters and send them there. And just one little carry-on suitcase bag can serve. He said, we are consistently first on site delivering clean water to the impacted people, the emergency impacted people. And at many of these emergencies, we deliver more volume of clean water than any of the large charities, the Red Cross, like any of these other large global charities who fly in water in plastic bottles by the like truckload or truck or train in huge amounts of water. And he said, our one little duffel bag can service 1 million people clean water. Or the million might be slightly wrong. I don't remember the number, but it was this very large number. And I was thinking, he wasn't bragging about it he wasn't focused on the sustainability part of it. He was focused on the speed and the impact to the people impacted by the emergency. But my brain got going on the sustainability aspect of it and the reduced amount of, like, I don't know, flying a plane full of water or driving a truck full of water in plastic bottles has a very, there's a lot of impact there versus the tool that takes existing local water and makes it clean. Anyway, I just found it very interesting. Shout out to Sawyer.
That's very interesting. It goes back again to the something that is dear to Jen. I know it's the question of liquid soap. What do you use for the detergent thing? Because it's when you think about it, it's just silly. You know, it's the same problem because you're paying for the transportation of something that is liquid, whereas the active thing it's
dry.
It's dry. Yeah. So the whole thing is silly. Yeah.
I mean, I will say I actually just got my next box of washing machine detergent sheets, which I ordered during one of our podcast recordings when Jen, you were telling us about this. I was like, I'd never heard of that. Let me go do it, and found it and ordered it. And I just got my newest box because we've continued to be, that's the product we buy in our house. Mm.
Yeah, and they've now made it so that you can mm-hmm. there are hand soap companies that it's a tablet and you put it into a thing of water and it's hand soap, mm-hmm. and there's dishwashing liquid and dishwasher blocks, and there's a lot of things now that are going in that direction of making the shipping so much more efficient and the packaging, you know, cardboard and not needing all the liquid and the carbon that it takes to transport it. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's that TED talk by, there's a South African chap that I think he won some kind of global award. And it all came from the idea that he just didn't want to have a bath. And because he didn't want to have a bath, he wanted to better clean himself without having a bath. And so he developed a product that once he started thinking about it, he could produce it. A low price point, but if he sold it to rich people who were lazy and didn't want a bath, then he could sell it at a much higher price point and make enough profit from that to actually be able to sell it at a really, really low price point in Africa, where people were going blind because they couldn't wash themselves because of the lack of water or sanitation. And so this whole project sort of snowballed from that. And so there were people in Africa who and NGOs that were able to buy this product at a very low price and actually create a situation that was much better for people in areas where there was no water. A kind of a win-win thing, really.
I think there are lots of solutions. there's so many solutions, but the problem is making the solutions available and to many people, to most people, and also changing habits. Because the detergent thing, I don't wash the clothes in my house, in my household. And I have not been able to convince my husband to switch to the detergent, the detergent sheet. I think there's two problems. This one is to make it available. And then the second problem is changing habits. I really believe the solutions are here.
You've been listening to Carbon Sessions, a podcast with carbon conversations for every day with everyone from everywhere in the world. We'd love you to join the Carbon Sessions so you too can share your perspectives from wherever you are. This is a great way for our community to learn from your ideas and experiences, connect, and take action. If you want to add your voice to the conversation, go to thecarbonalmanac.org/podcasts and sign up to be part of a future episode. This podcast is also part of the Carbon Almanac Network. For more information, to sign up for the emails, to join the movement, and to order your copy of the Carbon Almanac, go to thecarbonalmanac.org. Be sure to subscribe and join us here again, as together we can change the world.